Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. I'm Tim Wildman, and we appreciate you tuning in. Fred Jackson in studio with me.
Good morning, Tim.
Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
And in Kansas City, Kansas, is our good friend Ray Pritchard. Good morning, Ray.
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You got some bad weather in your area there?
Well, it's a little crazy here in the Plain States. North of us. Well, here in Kansas City right now, the high today is 82. The low tonight is 42. And up in Nebraska and South Dakota, just north of us, believe it or not, they've got a blizzard warning. So you go north, it's freezing and the snow is coming. And you go south, it's golf weather. So I don't know what to make of it.
All right, that's really a metaphor for life, really, if you think about it, huh? Well... You know, a lot of times Americans use the expression to talk of a negative experience, quote, it all goes south, end quote.
Right.
And that's not always a bad thing, okay? We're having warmer weather. We're not going to have the reason I mentioned that, we're going to have the snow and blizzard like you're talking about our friends in the Northern Plains are having. But looks to me like parts of East Texas, Arkansas, and Missouri and West Tennessee, they're going to get hit again with a round of severe. I don't know if it's going to be tornadic, but it said severe weather.
Huh? Severe weather, and you always have to, when you have that clash, that's a great demonstration what Ray is talking about. Just to his north, freezing weather,
yeah,
83. And I was looking at a map on Fox this morning, weather map, and even in Denver, I think they're getting snow there today, so just to your west. And then there's this line. 30s on one side of the line, 80s on the other side of the line. That is a recipe for disaster. So we're just going to, and by the way, that blizzard conditions continue right across through Illinois up into New England. It's a crazy time.
Yeah.
So if you're traveling, if you're flying today,
yeah,
and it's going to take you above that line, wear a parka. You may get on the plane, 80 degrees, but you better take a parka if you're going to Chicago.
Well, I got a friend flying to be here tomorrow. He lives in Dallas. He's flying from Dallas to Memphis today. And I said, you better check that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Huh? One time, I think I told this story, but, you know, when you get 60, you start telling, that's when you start telling stories multiple times to the same people, and they have to act
You've
like.
You've told us this before.
Okay. No, well, probably I have. Hey, you run out of stories, man.
Huh? That's right. That's why we repeat.
We repeat. Anyway, my dad was flying from Dallas to Memphis. This is 30 years ago. And springtime, just like today, and took off. And, you know, those planes can. With radar, they can navigate around storms. I mean, mm-hmm. That happens every day. Mm-hmm. But somehow they got caught up in a bad situation. You know, that can just happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're 25,000 feet in the air, and Dad says the plane starts shaking uncontrollably almost. The lightning's popping outside the window. It's just... He said, it was the only time I ever thought I was going to die from an airplane. I thought this plane's going down.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was, he said, one lady was praying. And he said, and another lady to the side of him, she wanted to drink. And so, I guess that'll preach, right?
That's right. We can do something with that.
Anyway, they just shake around. And he said it was really scary for everybody. And he said the pilot never said a word. And so it's about an hour, 15 minutes, and they land in Memphis finally and get on the ground, taxi up to the gate. And finally the pilot comes on, you know, and says, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Memphis. He said, I just want to tell you, I'm as happy to be here as you are. So evidently, the pilot himself questioned whether they would, you know, make it through that that thunder boomer. But those thunder boomer heads, they get up.
Yep.
They get up 30,000 feet, don't they?
At least.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least. Yeah.
I went to I was on a plane back in the 90s. It was part of a class trip to Europe. And the in-flight entertainment involved a movie in which a character drowned. Like, it was a, like they went to sea, and then there was a storm, and they died. And I thought, how odd of a film is this to show as we're flying over the Atlantic Ocean? Like, who picked that?
Right, right.
For me, I'm not scared of flying. I've flown all kinds of places. But I don't like landing. Like, you better stick this, sir or madam.
Right.
We've been up
right.
here this entire time, and we made it here. Hey, you better stick
twice this. In the last month that we've flown, Alice and I have flown twice. This has happened to us where the plane got down to within like 100 feet of the runway mm-hmm. and just soared up. Maybe not 100 feet, 200 feet or so.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in Miami, and then it happened in Memphis the other day. And what happens is it was in gusty crosswinds, mm-hmm. and, you know, you're 25, 35-mile-an-hour gusts, and the planes turn. You know, they're trying to mm-hmm. turn the plane right to get on, and they went right up back up after they had almost touched the
– That's when those pilots earn their money.
Yeah.
You got to be able to know what to do and just to line that thing up just yeah. right when you got crosswinds.
Also increases your prayer life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
you haven't been praying, you're going to start.
Yeah, I was wondering, hey, did we just barely miss another plane?
Right.
Or what's going on here?
Is there a truck on the runway?
They don't come on and tell you till after the fact, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of in crosswinds, one former President Trump, is hitting some turbulence now, right?
Yeah, and he already made the flight from his home in Florida to New York yesterday.
On Trump Force One,
yeah. And an extraordinary moment in U.S. history is set to unfold today in a Manhattan courthouse. Former President Donald Trump is expected to plead not guilty to multiple charges brought by a Democrat district attorney who has confessed to being out to get Trump. Today's booking and arraignment is likely to be relatively brief, but Trump is to be fingerprinted and learn the exact charges against him. You can read about this on AFN.net. I've shared the link on our Facebook as well. But this is the story that we've spent what feels like a month now talking about.
But now he won't be he won't have a mugshot, nor will he have cuffs on him. Right?
That's correct. They've determined that.
Yeah, fingerprinted is what our story says.
But is that normal or is that not normal? Ray, do you know?
I think this is an unusual circumstance because, Chris, as you said, this is unprecedented. There's never been a president or former president charged in a criminal, what is this, a criminal indictment? Is that the right word for it?
Yes.
So it's never happened before. Mm-hmm. So, Tim, I think it is quite unusual not to have the mugshot, not to have him in handcuffs. But I think there's some political considerations there. I think the people on the other side don't want the image of a former president in handcuffs because Americans will not stand for that.
Keep in mind, this is the same president who was twice impeached, so he holds that record on top of this record.
Right.
Yeah. The logistics for this have been incredible because what you saw yesterday when he was leaving Mar-a-Lago to go to the airport, you have this string of black SUVs. Which you normally see for a president. But he's got a whole contingent of Secret Service agents. So when they get to the courthouse in just over an hour or so, normally an accused person is going to be surrounded by the sheriffs or sheriff deputies. He's surrounded by his own Secret Service. So this is super complicated. It has never been done before. We understand that the former president likely will be in the courtroom only for a couple of minutes. We understand his lawyers may call for the dismissal of the charges. He is going to plead not guilty to the charges. Most of them are misdemeanors, over 30 charges. Most of them are misdemeanors. I think there's one felony charge, and that's in dispute by a lot of legal experts who say it never should have been elevated to a felony charge.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Jen Ellis about this at the bottom of the hour. So we'll get her thoughts on this and other topics. Jenna is a constitutional attorney and host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning right here on American Family Radio. So you're saying that the arraignment, is that what it's called, is to take place in the next hour?
In the next hour or so, the motorcade will leave Trump Tower and it will go down to the courthouse. They'll go through those initial procedures. And then shortly, I believe after noon Central Time, is when the appearance before the judge will take place. The judge had to rule last evening. Some media people wanted live camera shots inside the hallways, etc., and he said no to that. So there, a pool of photographers are on hand to take still images of the former president and the contingent.
Well, I just look at this, you know, not knowing what the indictment says, because there's 30-something counts of, and one, supposedly, I mean, this has been leaked information, which is in itself illegal, which Trump's lawyers are going to argue today, and I don't blame them. But this goes back 6 years.
Yep.
And it isn't a murder.
Nope.
Or a armed robbery.
Nope.
And it isn't somebody stealing money.
Nope.
And why haven't they taken it up? I know you don't sue a sitting president, but still, this just seems so blatantly political. It's just, anyway, we'll ask Jenna about this. It just seems ridiculous, absolutely, in every way, that they would be spending. This guy here, Bragg, the DA, he has turnstile criminal prosecution
involving actual hard crimes.
Yeah, he lets violent criminals go every day with hand, slap on the wrist. I mean, it's unbelievable. And his wife, by the way, Bragg's wife, she had a Twitter account where she said, I'm paraphrasing now, my husband's going to go after Trump.
Yeah.
And they're going to get him on a felony.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is before the fact, like bragging that it's going to be political. I mean, it's going to be because he is who he is, Trump. If this was some nobody businessman in Tampa, that this wouldn't even be a consideration.
This is money, and we've gone through this before, money that was paid to two women who claim that they had an affair with Donald Trump years and years and years ago.
Right.
And so this money, this is a non-disclosure agreement, which is not against the law. Non-disclosure agreements are not against the law.
So much for the non-disclosure.
Yes, exactly. So $130,000 to one of the Stormy Daniels, and then there was the other woman. So and Trump claims, no, I didn't have that relationship. Non-disclosure agreements are fairly common in certain circles of our society. Just leave it at that. But there's another funny side story going on here this morning. The mayor of New York, Mayor Adams of New York, is warning pro-Trump people to behave themselves because he says New York, the largest city.
Safest city in the
world. We had that.
Have a listen
to the mayor of New York City.
Mayor of New York City, cut number one.
Maybe some rabble-rousers thinking about coming to our city tomorrow. Our message is clear and simple. Control yourselves. New York City is our home, not a playground for your misplaced anger. We are the safest large city in America because we respect the rule of law in New York City. And although we have no specific threats, people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is known to spread misinformation and hate speech, she stated she's coming to town. While you're in town, be on your best behavior. As always, we will not allow violence or vandalism of any kind. And if one is caught participating in any act of violence, they will be arrested and held accountable.
The safest, largest city in America. I would like to add to that, as long as you don't use the subways, as long as you don't go out at night, And as long as you don't turn off the main streets, you're okay.
Jewish and Asian people get attacked on the regular.
Well,
New York.
I'm a little surprised he's calling people out by name. He's calling, Congresswoman
Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's a favorite target of the left. Yeah, of the right, pardon me. Of the left.
Well, anyway, go ahead, Chris.
I just think it's funny that, like, I mean, we had to take time out of somebody's life to hear the mayor say so many false things. It's not the safest place on the planet. And he said we don't allow violence and what. Yes, you do. I mean,
oh yeah, it's that. That was all you could refute all that. What he said was he's also playing to his liberal base crowd,
yes,
you know, in the media,
mm-hmm,
and so forth. Listen, yes, I know that there were Trump supporters who went into the Capitol on January 6th, but by and large, and generally speaking, Republicans don't riot, and they don't start committing acts of violence and shooting people. They didn't even at the Capitol that day.
No,
they went. They did go into the Capitol. A lot of Trump supporters did, what, hundreds maybe,
mm-hmm,
but they didn't take guns.
No.
They didn't set things ablaze. They didn't take hostages. It was the most pathetic coup in the history of. I mean, huh? Right? That was the worst insurrection in modern history.
Yeah, if that's an insurrection, what a pitiful failure it was. Look, we've already said a lot that happened that day should not have happened, but that was not an insurrection or an attempt to overthrow the government. I think what the mayor's doing, I think he's actually hoping for something like January the 6th to happen again so they can crack down again. But, guys, I don't think that's going to happen. Will there be some protesters? Will there be crowds? Look, everywhere Mr. Trump goes, it's always a spectacle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a spectacle in New York City, but there's not going to be a riot. It's not going to happen. If there's any trouble in New York City, it's going to come from the left, not from the right.
Yes. And for Republicans to riot, there's a lot of things that have to happen. First of all, they have to get off work. And huh?
Yeah.
And then you have to have somebody bring refreshments. You know, I mean, huh? Somebody has to pick up the kids and the grandkids, take them to the ball field.
That's right.
I mean, there's a lot of things that Republicans have to plan for before they commit a violent riot.
Yes.
So I just don't think it's going to happen. Especially there are in New York City, you've got like 12 Republicans too. So
yeah.
It's
right.
They're gonna have a hard time getting a quorum. Okay, so we'll see what happens today. The former president, Mr. Trump, in New York City, his hometown, ironically. And there's still a place there he slept at last night called Trump Tower.
Yeah.
So we'll talk to Jenna Ellis about this coming up at the bottom of the hour. What's your next story, Chris?
Well, we want to bring everybody's attention to a big event going on in Wisconsin today, where despite all the bad weather, there is a big vote for Supreme Court seats there. I'll share this link on our Facebook page here in a second. But long story short, control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court and likely the future of things like abortion access, Republican-drawn legislative maps, and years of Republican-backed policies in the key swing state rests with the outcome of an election today that has seen record campaign spending between the Republican and Democratic-backed candidates. The Republican is someone named Dan Kelly, and the Democrat is a lady named Janet Protasiewicz, and that will determine majority control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And people are making a big deal out of this because you've got the presidential election right around the corner, and Wisconsin, like a lot of other states, is going to be voting and making rules on how people vote and whatnot.
Yeah, this is for control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And Protasiewicz has got Planned Parenthood behind her. Mm-hmm. Kelly he has spoken out against abortion in the past.
But it also has something to do, and Jenna will maybe talk about this. Mm-hmm. People may wander around the country. Well, that just involves Wisconsin. Well, there are national implications because of something having to do with congressional redistricting that's associated with this, which may have national implications. I don't really understand it all, so I won't try to explain what I don't understand completely, but I do know it does matter. for folks outside of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk to Jenna about that as well. I want to ask you, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left here, Ray. I wanted you to tell folks this is Holy Week, and Christians around the world are going to celebrate Easter. I guess the Eastern Church has their own date, right?
Right. They follow a slightly different calendar. Some years it actually is the same. This year it's a little bit different. Most years it's a little different.
What Easter changes from year to year. Christmas doesn't. Why is that?
Oh, I was hoping and praying you weren't going to ask me that question.
I'm just throwing it out there for anybody. Okay. But go ahead.
Well, we can say this. Christmas has been set for what? 16, 17, 1800 years as December the 25th. Doesn't mean, Tim, that the Bible gives us that date. It doesn't. We can't say
it doesn't give us a date, right?
It does not give us the date. We know he was born. It could have been December the 25th. We don't know for certain. But that's been the set date for all these hundreds of years. The date of Easter, we had this discussion what several years ago, and you get deep into the sun and the moon and the full moon. And Fred, can you explain it? Because with this, it's a complicated formula. I believe the earliest that Easter can be is around March the 20th or the 21st or the 22nd, and the latest is like April the 23rd, 24th, 25th. So we're kind of right in the middle of where Easter can be, but it has to do with the lunar calendar and the full moon. Fred, I know that. Fred
take
help
it
me
away.
Out here,
take
buddy.
It away, Fred.
No, I cannot go any further than what Ray has. I think
We need to use the word equinox in here somewhere?
Yes, equinox. Definitely
That's
equinox.
That's what I thought.
There you go. I think what we all agree on is
that
the
sounds smart.
The important.
Just say equinox. You
just
sound like
equinox.
You're highly
equinox.
Intelligent.
No,
excuse me.
Yeah,
Chris,
go ahead.
Chris is grinning over there.
I'm just learning how to spell equinox.
Okay, Chris, do you know what? Do you know any more than what has been shared here?
What question are you wanting to know?
I want to know what defines every year when Easter is.
Okay. According to one website that I found, and this is one website, people. It's not Chris Woodward, okay? A website says, Easter always occurs on the first Sunday after the paschal full moon, which is parentheses, the first full moon that occurs after the vernal equinox, which signifies the beginning of spring in the
equinox.
Northern Hemisphere. And that is according to the Old Farmer's Almanac, which you might have heard one Fred Jackson quote a time or two on this here program.
What's a vernal?
I'm looking that up.
Well, you got your normal equinox.
And then you got your vernal.
That's what I'm saying, right? And then you got your vernal equinox.
I can tell you.
And that's named after a guy named Vern.
Yes.
Vern discovered
it. Vern discovered
it.
Yeah. According to the dictionary,
know what I mean? Burn.
Know what I mean?
The vernal equinox is the equinox in spring on about March 20th in the Northern Hemisphere and September 22nd in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah. So there you go.
That's your Mississippi Agri-News.
the vernal equinox. Okay. I'll bet you there were 1% of our folks listening who knew what a vernal equinox was.
No.
If anybody wants to become a meteorologist, I know a great university.
That's right.
All right. We will take a short time out right here. Jenna Ellis will be along with us after the break. She served in the Trump White House as counsel. So that's just an interesting angle, having had prior experience with President Trump. We'll talk to Jenna about what's going on in New York City after this break.
What does the American Family Association stand for? We believe that our ministry, as well as everything in the heavens and on earth, belongs to God, and our role is that of a trusted manager. These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church.
We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes. Stand by for news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically-centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Vito Perrone got fired for being nice. Mr. Perrone had been hired to be the next superintendent in East Hampton, Massachusetts. He was really made for the job, former high school principal, football coach there. But Mr. Perrone was given the heave-ho for a letter he wrote to the chairperson of the school board and the executive assistant, both women. He addressed them as ladies in his greeting. Shortly thereafter, the job offer was withdrawn. The Hampshire Daily Gazette reports both women considered the term ladies to be derogatory, and the fact that he did not know that as an educator was a problem. Mr. Perrone was also reprimanded for using ladies as a form of a microaggression. Now, in his defense, Mr. Perrone said when he was growing up, words like ladies and gentlemen were signs of respect. But if nothing else, we can conclusively declare that those school board broads in Massachusetts are definitely no ladies. I'm Todd Starnes.
Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." Matthew 19:14.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Fred, we got Share-a-thon coming up next week, right?
A week from today,
right.
Our Share-a-thon starts. So run next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We are looking so forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great opportunity. Our listeners, we get an opportunity to talk with them. You get an opportunity, our listeners, to hear testimonies of other listeners of what American Family Radio is doing for them, has done for them. I love those testimonies,
mm-hmm.
How people come across us, you know, and it's just a God thing many times. That's the way they describe it. So, yeah, it's a great 3 days. We enjoy it very much. You get to hear all of our hosts as we participate in the programs and get a chance to come alongside American Family Radio. And we only do this twice a year. 6 days of the year is the only time we go out there and we ask people to support us financially.
Right. Right. So that's coming up Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week, Share-a-thon. And we hope that you will make a generous donation, financial donation to our ministry to help us keep going and keep growing and expanding our territory, as the Bible says.
Well, I tell you what, American Family Radio is unique. Go up and down your dial, folks. Try to find something like American Family Radio.
Well, most of your Christian radio networks or stations, not all, but most of them are music and entertainment, which I'm not against music and I'm not against entertainment, but our world's going to hell. Excuse the English. We don't have we don't have time for, well, we don't have time for avoiding hard topics.
Yes.
In today's culture, because we have a country that's in peril.
Yes.
And our Constitution is in jeopardy, which means our freedoms and liberties may slip away. And it's kind of like the Titanic's, you know, the water's coming on. And a lot of our brothers and sisters just want to stay on the dance floor listening to the band play.
Yes.
And you're going like, come on, guys. Mm-hmm. You know, we need all the troops we can get. And, yes. and I'm not saying that, and it shouldn't be inferred, that I believe that, you know, we can save America in the sense that we are God.
Right.
Only God can save America. He birthed America. He can save America. But he does call on his people to occupy, the Bible says, until he comes, and to stand. And just for practical purposes, where do you want your grandchildren raised? And their children, and you know, the future of our country. Right. Don't we want to maintain our way of life and self-government and law and order and opportunity and all those things that people want to come to America for? Don't we want to preserve those things? We can only preserve those things if we fight for them, and we only can, you know, we have to be engaged. Thus. Your point, Fred, American Family Radio, every day. Yeah, we have a lot of programs that talk about the Bible and the gospel.
Yes.
But we also have a lot of programs that talk about what's going on in our country and how we can make a difference so that we can maintain all those things that I just mentioned a few minutes
ago. It all involves spiritual warfare. Some right. people like to say, right. well, you guys talk about politics. Well, the politicians
right.
are making decisions.
Right.
That really are part of the spiritual warfare out there. If you don't think politicians who favor abortion, who favor the LGBTQ agenda, if you don't think that's part of spiritual warfare, folks, you really do need to listen more carefully.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues. Tim, Ray, Chris, and Fred. Now we're joined by Jenna Ellis. As promised, Jenna is host of the program, Jenna Ellis in the Morning, right here on American Family Radio from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time each weekday. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning. And I just absolutely echo what you guys have been talking about, that we have to, as Christians, be founded first and foremost in the Word and learn the truth, which is the person of God, and to know him and to know his character. But then we need to take that out of the four walls of our church and the four walls of our home and go into our civil society and into these institutions that God has ordained for our good and make sure that we are promoting genuine liberty and freedom. And our founders understood this. I mean, so many of our founders were preachers. They were people who understood that fighting for freedom and what freedom genuinely means, which is to do the ability to do what we ought, not just what we want, to quote my good friend Oz Guinness, is so important to the preservation of maintaining our freedom to exercise religion and to have parental rights to teach our children at home, for example, like my parents did in homeschooling me. And worldview matters. So, you know, for the people who think that Christian programming just needs to be Bible teaching, that's part of it, certainly. But then we have to take that and apply it out into civil society in all aspects of life and family and vocation.
Amen. Amen, sister. Okay, so let's talk about President Trump's situation in New York. We talked about this at the top of the hour, and Jana, and that is, it's, I have a heart, and even I've heard some liberal commentators echo this. What does this guy Bragg, the DA in Manhattan, what is he bringing something up that's 6 years old? That's really nobody's seen the indictment, so we don't know exactly. But just everybody who's on both sides basically is saying, now one side would say it's more serious than others, than the people who support President Trump. But still, it seems like a loser all the way around for Bragg and the Democrats.
Well, it is. And it is a losing case that his predecessor, Cyrus Vance, who's no friend of Donald Trump or the Trump Organization, declined to prosecute, and the DOJ declined to prosecute. And this is well outside of the statute of limitations for a misdemeanor that should only be 2 years. But then he's trying to manipulate this into a felony, which would still only be a 5-year statute of limitations. And so this is really all about a campaign promise that Alvin Bragg ran on for Manhattan District Attorney, which is to get Trump. And this has nothing to do whatsoever with the rule of law. This is all about weaponizing government, which is the term we've heard so prolifically from the right in this sense, and also with the weaponization of government committee that our good friend Representative Jim Jordan is heading. And this is all about applying two different standards. You have the standard that's applied to the Democrats, which is they can literally get away with anything that they want. And we saw how, you know, these trans agenda supporters went into the Tennessee Capitol this past week, and several times, and that was fine. Nobody was arrested. Black Lives Matter. They marched during COVID, and they burned and looted in cities across America. And most of those people were given no bail. And sitting Vice President Kamala Harris, then candidate, you know, said that she was going to support the bail efforts. And this Manhattan DA won't even prosecute legitimate crime in his own city. But then you have the standard that's applied against conservatives all across the board, including President Trump, which is to prosecute for things well outside the statute of limitations, increase potential just misdemeanors to felonies. You have parents who have been targeted and put on the domestic terrorism watch list across the country for simply inquiring what's going on in schools. You have pastors outside of abortion clinics who are subject to pre-dawn raids from the FBI. And all of this is singularly focused to quell speech and intimidate conservatives. I mean, I'm even going through weaponization of government against me. I have complaints that are being filed against my bar license simply for, and you guys will not believe this, I talked about it on radio this past Friday on my show, but I actually had a bar complaint from someone in Colorado who suggested that I am not fit to practice law as a conservative because I am, quote, homophobic and against the LGBTQ agenda. That is the most stark example of how the leftists are trying to weaponize government at every level and excise Bible-believing Christians from our jobs and service to this country.
What do you think the chances are of, and by the way, this Bragg fellow, the DA, keep in mind you have a Manhattan, New York district attorney, one of the blue of the blue, and going after Trump on something that's 6 years old, right? Mm-hmm. That, as I said, doesn't involve, it wasn't a bank robbery, or he didn't burn down a house, or he didn't commit a felony in that regard, or something that was, this is just his wife, Bragg's wife, said on Twitter, my husband's, this I'm paraphrasing now, but basically, and she turned her Twitter account from public to private after she did this. She said, he's going to go after Trump and get him on a felony. That's what she said. In other words, this was kind of, Jenna, as you said, this is contrived. This is forced. This is a manipulation of the normal political judicial process. Can anybody, let me ask you this. Can anybody step in and stop Bragg from doing this based on a misuse of his office, or is that off the table?
Well, he should be prosecuted for malicious prosecution. That actually in all jurisdictions is a crime, and he certainly should be subject to his own bar. But in the state of New York, you know, obviously that's not going to happen. But what needs to happen here is that this judge needs to be the objective, unbiased arbiter.
The judge. So it really a lot depends on the judge here.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And if he's looking at this honestly, then he should grant what will soon be forthcoming, a motion to dismiss from the Trump legal team.
He
on
can
a
do
variety.
That. The judge has authority just to say, I look at the facts and dismiss the indictment.
He can. If there is on a motion to dismiss,
gotcha.
He can make a finding and conclusion of law.
Does he live in New York?
Well, yes, and this is the same judge that found the Trump Organization guilty of, you know, 17 different counts. So I don't have a lot of faith in the particular process up there. But the other possibility is a request for a change of venue from the Trump legal team as well, which I anticipate that they will likely file. And the news also broke that President Trump hired a former partner from Cadwalader, Wickersham & Taft, which is one of the most well-respected law firms in New York City, who's going to head his criminal defense team.
Listen, you
know
what?
I think is great.
Again, this is a personal attack on President Trump because of who he is. Listen, look back. I'll just give you two glaring examples. The Clintons, the Hillary Clinton and former President Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was in the White House when he testified, if I remember correctly, over the Monica Lewinsky situation, and he lied.
Under oath.
Under oath.
Yeah,
okay?
Perjury.
There was no... now, I know it's a different standard, I believe. You can't really sue a sitting president. I'm just saying he didn't resign. There was no calls for his resignation. For people who want to say to me, well, nobody's above the law, talking about President Trump, I want to say, well, Bill Clinton was above the law, and his wife, Hillary Clinton, you remember the FBI? We don't need to relive that whole story. The FBI... James Comey said, yeah, here's what he said. I'm paraphrasing. Yeah, she broke the law. It's clear as day. But are we going to prosecute? No, not going to. Because remember, she set up the server while she was Secretary of State so she could bypass accountability and congressional oversight. That was the intent for setting up this private server. Had classified information on there.
Yes.
And that was all. Everybody knew this. And Comey said, no, not going to do anything.
There was actually a great piece in National Review today on that with that exact title, When a Democrat President Was Above the Law.
Right.
And if you told us that perjury should go unpunished, then you should sit out because nobody is above the law argument is what the writer suggests. And it's a great piece in National Review today, which, by the way, is no friend of Trump either. They're the ones that had that big headline, Never Trump.
Well, I want to one other question, Jenna, about this. Why isn't the president being, former president, being handcuffed and mugshot?
So that was a negotiation between the Manhattan District Attorney's Office and his legal team, which because he's coming in for the arraignment, bail and so forth, all of those arguments will be set. So he will be fingerprinted. They won't do a mugshot. That's typical in these types of high profile situations. And so so I think that was actually the right way to go.
Well, I agree.
In terms of not doing that. But although, I think a lot of leftists are frustrated.
Yeah. Now, President Trump's killing it on raising money off this, isn't he?
He is. But interestingly, everybody points to the $8 million. But the DeSantis PAC that is the most prominent that's asking him to announce actually has raised this quarter $30 million. So this
is
tells me,
what?
Right? So so in terms of high-level donors, they're still in DeSantis's camp. And, you know, this race is far from over. And so while the grassroots support is rightly with President Trump against the weaponization of government, I don't think that this primary contest is done by a long shot.
Okay, wow. So I didn't realize that the DeSantis – now, he hasn't even announced yet. He's supposed to, win in May? Maybe.
He has said that he'll wait until the end of the legislative session. But interestingly, last week, the legislature just filed a bill that would change the resign to run law that they have multiple times previously. I think they need to just get rid of it, frankly. But that would require DeSantis to resign first before running for federal office. So they're going to change that. And I think that's really what he's waiting on. And so this is just a pack. A political action committee that has raised over $30 million. And the polls right now, I don't think that a lot of people who are actually supporting DeSantis are coming out and saying that only because he hasn't announced yet.
And Ray, you might want to comment on this. Ray, you still there?
I'm right here.
Okay. Ray Pritchard with us. You might want to comment on this too. There is a wellspring of sympathy right now for Mr. Trump that is reflected, I think, in the polls, especially among Republicans, who may favor Governor DeSantis or Mike Pompeo. I've heard a couple of people who are going to support him that are friends of mine. But right now they're saying, you know, we need to show support for President Trump. So anyway, Ray, you want to comment on that?
Well, number one, that's clearly what's happening. A lot of people are, quote, keeping their powder dry, waiting for the right time to decide who they're going to back. And Jenna, I do want to ask you a question. Some people are talking about a gag order, and it occurred to me, as I was thinking about, I don't really understand that exactly myself. Could you explain to our listeners what a gag order is if the judge hands that down? Who would that apply to? And if that does happen, what would be the political ramifications in a case like this?
Yeah, so basically a gag order is simply a judge's order that the particulars of a case pending before the court cannot be discussed in public. And so that would potentially apply to all of the parties in the case, meaning not only the district attorney, who hasn't said anything, but primarily for President Trump himself as the defendant and also his legal team. So a lot of people, even though these types of gag orders have occurred, of course, routinely in the past, a lot of people, including me, think that they're unconstitutional because the defendant, of course, has a right, a First Amendment constitutionally protected right to speak in public and to present a defense in the court of public opinion as well as the court of law. And so what this would effectively do, though, in this instance, because it's President Trump, who is a declared candidate for office, in my view, would effectively amount to election interference, because this would handicap him from talking about something that could seriously impact potential voters in terms of whether or not they're going to support him.
So if this judge today did grant a gag order, could the Trump team appeal that?
Yes, and the Trump team has already said that they are going to look at all of the First Amendment questions, and they would challenge a gag order if that's handed down, and it is expected to be.
A gag order on Donald Trump? Who are we kidding?
And a lot of people are suggesting that the reason that the DA may want this, or even possibly the judge, and I certainly don't want to speculate on the judge's disposition here, but potentially because they know that Trump would likely disregard it, and you can certainly be held in contempt of court for that, and there's potential jail time consequences and so forth.
Well, somebody better take the phone away at bedtime.
Good luck with that.
Right.
Huh? The lawyers are going to tell him, do not say anything on social media, Mr. President. We're now.
They're going to
okay,
tell
we're,
him. Okay,
we're going home now. All right? Melania, do not let him on the phone. Okay? And he's going to say, don't worry about it. And then about 12 o'clock, he's going to start typing something in all caps that's going to go
the
out.
Coke and French fries talking.
No, I don't know. A gag order against Donald Trump, I doubt that'll last more than a couple of days. Anyway, thank you, Jenna, so much. And you're going to be here with us for Share-a-thon, right?
I am, and very much looking forward to it and hearing from listeners and also talking about what AFR has done in my life. I'm so grateful to be with you every morning and to have the drive time first show of the day to share the biblical worldview perspective. And I'm so grateful to be part of the AFR family. So looking forward to seeing you next week.
Okay, Jenna, take care. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, that's Jenna Ellis joining us there. Brad, any thoughts on any of the topics we covered there?
Well, one last thing. A big factor in this case is the media. And I can tell you, looking at, you know, when you look at the Associated Press, which we look at each day, and see their bias. And I think if the media became the jury tomorrow, they would declare Donald Trump guilty of all charges. That's where we are. And that is a tremendous asset for the Democrats and their allies right now, is that the media is on their side in this. And so when you have a media that's only going to give one side of the story, that has an impact on where the public is in their minds about this. There was a CNN poll, I think it came out in the last 24 hours, and their poll said 60% of Americans believe that Donald Trump should be found guilty. So that gives you an idea. And if you're watching CNN, it's probably no surprise that you would think that way.
How about this angle, politically speaking? So I just read this comment on, I guess it was Fox News. There are some people who think like this. The comment went like this. The indictment of Trump is part of the Democrat playbook. They want Trump's diehards and others, Republicans, to get riled up so that Trump wins the Republican nomination. They know he is easiest to beat and that DeSantis will demolish them if he gets the nomination. Republicans don't fall for it, DeSantis 2024. Obviously, this person is a supporter of the governor of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But, Ray, he's saying this fellow believes it's
That's rather, what is it, Machiavellian? That the Democrats are doing this not to destroy Trump, but to actually rile up his base so he'll roll to the Republican nomination.
So you don't buy that?
I do not buy that. The people on the left, they hate Donald Trump, hate him with a passion that's hard for us to understand or grasp, right?
Yeah.
Hate him with all that is in their being, and they want him destroyed
in every way possible. They're in stage four of Trump derangement syndrome.
Yes, yes. Heading to stage five as we speak.
Stage five of TDS. So interesting.
I do have an interesting headline, and I thought of you when I read this.
Of me?
Yes, I thought of you when I read this headline, given your appreciation for the sport of golf. There's an article.
It's Masters Week, Chris.
It is.
We're all golfers now.
We're all golfers
right.
Now.
Yeah.
Or golfers, as some people might say. But anti-Trump hush money case has more holes than his Doral golf course. I was like, that's a Tim Wildman headline right there.
That's good. That's good stuff right there. Well, all right, Mr. Trump arraigned today, and any hour now.
Yeah, and very shortly he'll be headed towards the courthouse.
You know, I know that this is a judge in New York in Manhattan. I don't know. I'm assuming he's liberal. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There are.
It seems likely.
I know there are seven conservatives in Manhattan. But I would just say this. Personally, I wouldn't be surprised if this judge dismissed this case.
Really?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't because of the statute of limitations argument. And also, the DA has a Trump's lawyers are going to argue this, has a personal vendetta here. Mm-hmm. And his wife does.
Yep.
And also just the unprecedented nature of bringing charges against a former president. It's never happened in our country's history. On to me, what looks like just flimsy stuff that has.
Yes.
Yep. So, I'm just throwing that out there for what it's worth. I think there's a chance that he could just dismiss the case. All right. As they say, you can indict a ham sandwich, right?
Right.
That's right.
Or in the case of former President Trump, you can indict a Big Mac.
Huh? Well played. Well played.
We will return in 5 minutes with more of today's issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.